before you realize it's another month. And the topic tonight is peace in a family. It's something we all need, especially in this generation. And I would like to address some of the problems that are causing us a lot of problems in our life and see if it's possible to correct them, or it's just a decree that we have to live with that. We have to get into the source of the problem. It's not a secret that the more materialistic the world became, especially in the last few centuries, the statistic shows that there are more and more problems in peace in a family, also in raising children. It's not a secret also that this generation, we have the worst statistic perhaps in history when it comes to divorce rates and when it comes to children that goes off the right way. And the question is it coincidence? Is it meant to be? Or there's something that we did wrong and still doing wrong that create all these problems for us? 30 years ago, when a kid found out that his parents are going to be divorced in the next month, it was the end of his life. He didn't want to go to school. He felt that, no, I don't want anyone to see me. Why? How am I going to say that my father lives in one address and my mother lives in a different address? One generation after, only one generation after, today, if you go to an average class and you have 30 students, 22, 25 of them are all divorced. What happened in this generation? That's another question that we have to ask ourselves. 30 years ago, when I was a kid, I was in 8th grade. There was one kid in school, I'm just describing you the difference between, let's say, it's not even 30 years ago, we're talking about 25 years ago. There was one kid in 8th grade, what is it, 14 years old, 8th grade? Something like that, 14 years old, that started to smoke cigarettes. The entire school, the entire city, it's a city with 150,000 people in Israel. If you know Israel, you know Bat Yam, you ever heard about Bat Yam? It's not far from Tel Aviv, maybe 7 miles south. The entire city was talking about it. I remember my parents saying, make sure you don't get anywhere close to this guy. Whenever you see him, you run to the other side of the school. All the teachers were afraid to even talk to him. His name was Avi Ajinji, Avi the Redhead, 14 years old, 14 years old. And don't get me wrong, he wasn't walking like this with a cigarette in front of all the people. Was going in the backyard of the building, hiding somewhere, smoking cigarettes. He was the number one criminal in the city of Bat Yam. 25 years later, kids in his age stabbing people to death every week. Almost everybody smoked cigarettes. Everybody used drugs. There are people already that the police already have a list like this on their record when they got to this age. One generation after, such destruction. I remember one time one kid threw a bag with water on one of the teachers from the third floor. The school was off for a week. Nobody is allowed in, out, investigation, problems, checking one by one. Today, this is one generation after. We find from this terrible statistic that while we ran after so much, what we ran after convenience and wealth actually was used as poison to us. We are paying today the price of what we wanted so much. Don't get me wrong, it's not a sin to be successful. It's not a sin to be wealthy. It's a sin not to behave with that in the right way. If you know how to use it, it's a great thing. The greatest thing for a Jew is to be wealthy and to use his money in the right way, like the creator of the world wished that he should do. The worst thing for a Jew is to be wealthy and use his money in a negative way. The worst. It would be better off for him to be poor. The Gemara asks a question. What's better? To be poor? To be very wealthy? Or to be an average, in the middle, make a living? What do you think the answer is? Everybody would say, to be wealthy, what do you mean? The answer is, in the middle. Why not to be poor? If you say that money could be a danger to me, you might as well be very poor. No. You may become a thief. It's very hard to live such kind of life. You don't have enough food. You can't handle it, the pressure. You may start cheating and doing bad things. Average, you make a living, that's the best scenario. The Gemara asks a question, why God doesn't give a person his parnasah, his living, on Rosh Hashanah? After all, the Torah teaches us that in Rosh Hashanah, Hashem is making a decree how much money each one of us will make for the entire year. So for one person, he decided 30,000. For the other person, he decided 30 million. It's all up to his decision based on who the person is. Why doesn't he give it to him in one shot? See you in the next year. When you come again, I'll decide how much to give you next year. The answer is, God told us in the Torah that the things that he wants the most from a human being is to be hanging, not knowing what's going to be tomorrow with him. And that's a lesson in education, in faith. If you know a little bit the history of our fathers in the 40 years that they were in the desert, God told them, I'm giving you every day what you need for today. I not allow you to keep anything for tomorrow. Don't save for tomorrow. Tomorrow I will supply you for what you need tomorrow. What happened to those who did not believe? There were people who did not have faith. What do you mean? Maybe tomorrow it's not going to be rain with bread. Where is the bread going to come? Maybe tomorrow it's not going to be. Let me push a little bit for the side. What happened? Worms, they all got spoiled. Why it doesn't happen today? Why when a person is saving for 50, 60 years today, nothing happened to his money? It's safe. It's in Switzerland somewhere. The money is there. Why Hashem doesn't make the money have worms over there? Why? What's the difference? Because we're not even in this level. When a person is in a high level, he doesn't really need to save. Because he knows the one who created me supplied me with what I need to eat. If I have to starve to death, that means I finish my job in this world. One way or the other, what should I eat my heart? One of the two. But today what the people do, there's only one thing in their mind. They busy 100% with money. Now what does it have to do with the topic tonight? Why I started to spend 5 minutes from the lecture speaking about this sickness in society? Because this is the number one reason why all the families are broken today, almost all of them. If people would not be busy 99% of the time about business and wealth and investment and all the things in a house would be a lot better. I'll give you an example. An average businessman today, with all the businesses that he has to handle with, business trips, this store, these chains, meetings here, meeting there, flying overseas, merchandise, China, Mexico, Ecuador, he has no time to see his children. Sometimes people have, maybe in an average week, they see their children 2-3 hours net. It got to a point that there was one story that a kid came to his father and wanted to show him a test that he had in school. He wanted to brag about his mark. So the father said, 5 minutes, I'm on the phone. 7 o'clock in the evening, finally he got home from the office. I'm on the phone. Then he came again at 7:30. 2 more minutes. It's already 9 by now. Another phone and another conference. So then at 9 o'clock he got a phone call. So he looks at the caller ID. It's something local. He hears his son on the phone. Well, where are you? Where are you calling from? He said, I went to the neighbor across the street to call you. He said, why did you do it? I realized the only way to talk to you is to call you. You don't have time for us. We don't exist for you. Yes, of course, the parents going to say, what are we working for? For the kids. we live with some kind of illusion that we think that we're really feeding our children. And the reason why we live with this kind of feeling is because we are ignorant. Why we are ignorant? Because we don't learn Torah. If we would learn the instructions of God, we would know that every baby that is born, his entire living come with him. It's a budget deal. Nobody came to this world without his parnasa, without his living. The Gemara said, "Tinok ba velachmo beyado." A baby comes and his basket with his food for the rest of his life comes with him. It's attached. It doesn't come from you. You, the father, you the one who go and makes the money and give it to the children. But the money that you make, God is sending into your budget for the kids. Which means, sometimes people say, why should we need more than two children? Two, it's enough. It's very hard to raise children. Two, don't, Moshe, don't kill me, please. Two, it's too much for me. Three, one more. 7 years they fighting. Maybe they have one more kid. Finally, they have three kids. I told you, it's too much for me. I'm on the point of having nervous breakdown. That's sometimes the case. Sometimes the people say, but we don't have money to support another kid. College, another $50,000. Car, 100, I don't know. I'm not so familiar. Another 100. Car, another 20. Food, and they already calculated how much a kid will cost in the next 20 years. And we cannot afford it. That's where the mistakes come. The truth is that it's exactly the opposite. If a person has one kid and he doesn't have a good living, he should right away want to have another one. And if he doesn't have a good living, he should have right away another one. And if he still doesn't make good, he should have another one and another one. And you already have 10 children, he doesn't make a good living, don't give up. Where is the logic here? Now, I'm not a fool exactly, you know. I'm telling you things that you cannot digest. The answer is because when you have one kid, you have a chance that this kid's fortune is to be wealthy or not. Only God knows. He brought the soul into this body. So maybe this kid supposed to be a millionaire. Maybe not. So if he's not, maybe the second one will be. Maybe the third one will be. It's enough that one of the 10 will be a millionaire. Your future and your pension is set forever. Why? Because you are going to be the one who receives his budget. Until he's 20 years old, you're going to enjoy thanks to his luck. Why? Because God is sending him the money, but it goes into your bank account. That's the way it is. People think we're making the money, we're giving them. No, they make the money for you, but it's the other way around. It's like, you cannot lose with that. If you go with that, in the end you see that it's always going to work. One of them will be the one who will have the wealth. 1 out of 10 is a very good chance. 1 out of 10. Hard to believe that they're all going to have miserable life. One has to have good life. This one will set you up. But depend how you're going to raise him. If you raise him in the right way, he's going to love you for the rest of your life. When you're going to need one day that to change your diapers when you're 80 years old, he's going to run to do it. Today, age 50 already, they already set you up in an old age place. Father, I found you such a great place for you to go. Don't worry, I'll take care of all the bills. But I'm only 50. What do you mean? I'm thinking about getting married soon. No, believe me, you'll relax over there. Why? They want to get rid of them. They don't have patience for them. But I raised you, I gave you my life for 20, 30 years. Why are you being ungrateful for me? I'm sorry, I have my own stress. I cannot handle you. There are parents who raise their children, and when they became old, they don't even come once a year, 1 minute to see them. I hear this all the time. How did it happen? One guy came to the rabbi, and he said, "Rabbi, I have one request from you. I don't trust anybody, I trust you. When I'm going to die, I want you to make sure that you bury me with a coat, warm coat, and $5 in my pocket." So the rabbi said, "I never had such a strange request. Why do you need a coat and a $5 in your pocket?" So he said, "I tell you why. I know that there will be soon the resurrection of the death, right? Everybody speak about the Messiah and this. It's going to be the resurrection of the death. So if I wake up from my grave, I want to make sure that if it's going to be November, December, I don't want to freeze. So I want to have a warm coat. And I want to be able to get a good cup of coffee. So I want $5 in my pocket. I got to get a warm cup of coffee." Why? Because I know that my children will not worry about getting me a warm coat, and they won't care about getting me a hot cup of soup or a hot cup of coffee. That's why I trust you to make sure you put it in my pocket that I'll be ready for the day. So the rabbi told him, guess what the rabbi told him? You're going to like it. The rabbi told him, you have nothing to worry about this. You don't need a coat and you don't need the $5. So he said, why? He said, if this is the children that you raised, you're not going to resurrect in the resurrection of the dead. You fell big time. You're not a tzaddik. So what do we learn from this? What do we learn? 99% of the education of the children, it's going to be by copying you. The way you behave, that's what they're going to be. I'll give you an example. When you have a kid, he doesn't know how to lie yet. When is normally the first time that a kid in his life learned to lie? First experience. When someone called one of the parents, and they're not in a mood to speak to that person, so what is the first thing they tell him? He's 5 years old. My father is not home yet. Right away, then that's when they're young, it goes right into their conscience, they're going to grow up with this now. That's a shortcut, easy way out. Wow. It's not here, I'm not here. And then it becomes worse and worse and worse, and then it leads to stealing. It's one thing leads to another. And then you wonder, what did I do in my life that I have such children? I have a guy that came to cry to me about the situation of his son. And he told me like this, every 2 weeks I call the police and turn him in, and they put him in jail for a few months, and then he comes out. 2 weeks later I send him into jail, in and out. That was my life with this kid. Beating up my wife, stealing checks from me, forging things. Almost every week I hear stories like this. And I'm only one person. And I hear so many stories like this, supposedly from nice families. Families you're not going to believe that that's happening. They raise children, they look respectable people. One guy came to me a week ago, he saw me in a place. Don't ask what this kid did to me. Everywhere I go, people tell me, your son owe me $10,000, your son owe me. The guy is not even 19 years old. Already went to all his father's friends and did such a tragedy to this guy. I'm afraid to show my face in front of my customers. They thought that he comes in the name of his father. How did it happen? What's going on here? Let's see some of the most critical mistakes that we make in the family, when we are in the family. Problem number one, we never addressed our personality, our bad traits. Some of us have pride, anger, laziness. We are stingy. We have dirty mouth. We don't have patience. This is very big sicknesses. There is no way of being married happily when you have so many bad sicknesses. Spirituality, you are very mentally ill. You think that someone that is mental is somebody that is hospitalized behind bars and they don't let him out and they tie his hand. That's a mental case, not true. It could be that we are in our life more mental than some of these people. Why? To be stingy and all the time to be worried not to eat, not to go to the bathroom that you don't need to eat again, and you are always worried how can I save money and take a coupon and drive 5 hours, spend $20 on gas to save $3 on a coupon, that's a sickness. It's affecting our life tremendously. To be angry, everything that you don't like, you're like a tiger, screaming, yelling, fighting, I don't want to say violence and all the other things that happen. Pride, I must say the last word in the house. Whether she's right, whether she doesn't right, I'm always going to be the winner in the argument. Then 10 years later, he wonder why he's already divorced 3 times. The divorce rate in this generation, I don't know in America, but in Israel, it's already the new generation, it's getting to 70% divorce rate. In America, somebody told me in New York, Manhattan, it's more than 100% divorce rate. So I said, how could it be more than 100%? So he says, some people are divorced 6-7 times already. It made it more than 100%. Then what's going on here? One rabbi in Israel, he sits in the office when the people come to get registered to get married. And right next to it, it's the room of the divorce. Usually, it's always one next to the other. So the rabbi tells the people, here is the application to get married. And he gives them right away another application to get divorced. So what's this? He said, this to save you a year and a half of waiting. He said, what do you mean? He said, statistics shows that every 100 couples that come to this room return here within 4 years, 70% of them returns here. But by the time they come to file for divorce in a rabbinical court, it takes about a year and a half because we have so many cases. So why don't you save yourself the time, fill up the application, submit it on the way out, so when the time you realize you want to get divorced, you're only going to wait a month or two. I save you a lot of headache. Some of them say, thank you, Rabbi, we appreciate it. Some of them curse him. This is what you wish us. I'm not wishing you anything. I just describe you the situation. You have to understand, look. When God created Adam, the Torah says right there that it's not good for a man to be alone. He needs a partner. He decided to make him a female. Why didn't he make the female the same way he made the man? How did he make the man? He said a word and there's a man. He did not take a hammer and nails or I don't know, all kinds of things and made him a special shape. No. Everything in this world was created with the spiritual word. The creator of the world says there should be light, you have light until today. And it says the earth will turn, it turns until today, it never slowed by a second. 1700 kilometers an hour. For 5,769 years already it moves. It never slowed down by a second. Just imagine if sometimes the earth would slow down or go a little bit faster, all your watches will go to the garbage. You wouldn't have a watch. How can you rely on the watch always walking in the same speed? But the earth sometimes decides to rest. We would have a problem. We could not rely on time. We would not know sunrise. We would not know sunset. We would not know until what time we have to do Shema Yisrael. We would not know if we got married on this day or the next day because we're not sure about the time. If the baby is born on Shabbat, just on the border, we won't know because a minute before, you have to circumcise him next Shabbat. If it's a minute after, you have to circumcise him Sunday. Since the earth is sometimes slowing and sometimes not, you wouldn't know what to do. You could not be Jewish. So the time is very important. Remember, time only exists in a place where material exists. If you have material, you have time. If there's no material, you lose time. You don't know how to measure time. Time could be only measured in a place of material. That's a law. This is, by the way, what Albert Einstein said, but the Ramban said it 700 years before him already. And it says in the Ramban, time exists only where there is time. Now, when God created Eve, he created Adam, he created Eve, he could have created her in a normal way like he created him, but he did not. He created her from Adam. The reason that she has life came from her husband, from her man. Why did God want to signal to the woman? You remember, the only reason I created you is to be a partner to this person. If Adam would not be created, I wouldn't need you here. I only brought you here as a partner to him, as an help to your husband. That's one thing that he says clearly in the Torah, and that's why her life came from Adam, from his rib. She was created from him. The word Baal in Hebrew means husband. Husband. Baal has a few different meanings. Baal means an owner. For those who know Hebrew, they can agree with me. Baal means an owner. Baal means a person that had relation with his female. It's called Baal. Be'ilah. That's what it is. So now we have one word, already two different meanings. An owner and a person that had relation. Baal means when a woman was created, we see there's a difference between the way he created man and he created a woman. A woman was created with a seal that everybody would know if she's a used product or not. She cannot hide that fact. Today I heard it's not so true anymore, but this is a fact. God made the female to be dedicated for one person. The actual ideal life for a woman would be to meet a person, to get married to him, and die with him together and never know any other man. That's a big success for a woman. Today, if a woman say, oh, I'm 60 years old married, the only man that I knew in my life is my husband, people would look at her, what a miserable woman. Well, she's crazy. She's old-fashioned. But that was a great success in the time of that. When the woman was created, this is the plan. That's why God made her a sign to know if she's brand new or not. Why a man doesn't have a sign? Because according to the plan of the Creator, He wanted him to have one wife. That's the ideal point. But he's allowed to have more than one wife. A man really, according to the Torah, the Muslims, by the way, they keep that law until today. They have some of them more than one wife. But a man was allowed to have more than one woman. Until 1,000 years ago, the Ashkenazim, the Europeans, used to have more than one wife. They had one wife in France. If he was a businessman, he had a wife in Germany. And they had different children, and he would support both of them. He would be with her a month. Remember, there was no cars, no trains, no planes. So if he wanted to go from one country to another, it would be by a boat. It could be months. So that means he leaves his wife now for a year. He goes to do business over there for 2-3 months. He needs a wife to live with her. He lives with her, he finishes with her, he comes back with her, he's living with her. That's how it was. Today the world is different. It's not realistic to have more than one wife so much, but this is the way life was. Why the word Baal? Baal means the husband should be the one who removed that seal from that woman. That's why it's the same word. It's not coincidence. One word equal two different meanings. Owner. Three. Owner, husband, and the first one who removed that seal from the woman. Three different things symbolize what's the connection between the husband and the wife. Comes the Torah and says like this. You want to have a successful marriage, there are a few things you have to make sure that they're always going to be in your house. Rule number one, you have to do everything you can that your wife will always be happy. We'll see how it's possible soon. You have to make her happy all the time. Every holiday, you must buy her gifts. Clothing, according to your ability. Some people have money, they can afford it. Some people have less, so they buy flowers. But it's not really the value of the gift. It's the actual gift. If a woman knows that my husband is not doing so well, but he bought me a rose for $2, all right, it's only $2, but it's not really the money. It's the actual thing that he was thinking about me. Rule number three, a person has to give his wife every day plenty of compliments. Every time she cooks, he has to tell her, wow, you're such a great cook. She heard it 5,000, Rabbi, what are you talking about? 5,000 times I already told her, I'm tired of repeating it every day. No. The psychology of a woman is the more compliments she hears from her husband, she has less desire to fight with him. Even if he does bad thing to her. Remember, if you don't give your wife enough money, she's going to want to fight with you all the time. So there's a way to make peace. Give her compliments instead of the money. You'll see that she's not going to have any problems. You don't give her compliments, she wants money. You don't give her money, she's very angry. Now remember, I'll give you an example from life. One guy comes to me after the lecture and says, listen, I have a problem. I'm afraid that my wife is cheating on me. This is what he says. I say, you have any proof? He said, no proof. I'm really searching for the proof, and so far I found nothing. So I said, so what makes you think that she's cheating on you? He said, listen, until 2-3 months ago, me and my wife were mamash like the beginning. Two lovers, you know, we have great relationship. Now in the last 2-3 months, every time I try to get close to her, she's avoiding me. She's making an excuse. I don't feel good. I have a headache. I have this. I have that. I didn't go to the mikveh. Making me all kinds of stories, you know. I realized something is fishy here. She has to have somebody else. So he said, I checked the computer, nothing. I checked on the phone bills, nothing really. So I told him, I will tell you what happened. So he said, how do you know what happened? I said, well, give me one chance, I'll tell you what happened. He said, okay, go ahead. I said to him, 2 or 3 months ago, did you ever tell your wife that she gained weight? I said, yes. I told her that she became very fat. I say, you just finished your marriage, that's it. It's over. Your wife doesn't have anybody, don't worry. What happened? Your wife lost her confidence to be around you. That's why she's making excuses. Not another man. Don't jump to conclusion. One word can ruin the entire life of a person. The next 20 years will never be the same. Why? Because now you're going to tell her a million times how skinny she is. It's not going to help. She already knows what's in your mind. She lost her confidence. How many times are you going to have to come and say, listen, I didn't mean it. It's not going to help. She already knows what you think about her. Even if she becomes skinnier than before, psychologically, 20 years, she'll remember what you said. This is a mistake that people don't know. They say they make this mistake and they ruin their marriage. Because remember, sometimes it becomes worse and worse and worse until there's a complete separation. Another rule in making marriage very healthy, a husband should put time to help his wife in the house. Even if he has money to send her 5 maids, even if she has a babysitter, even if she has a driver, whatever she has, he has to come do something helping in the house. That's going to create very healthy connection. We're going to talk soon about the women, don't worry. Now we're talking about the husband. When the husband is not happy from his wife, what happened? A month ago when she was making a soup, he was licking his finger. Now when he's not happy from her, all of a sudden the soup is bad. Why there's a mess on the floor? Why you're not picking up the toys? That's not really he cares that he has toys on the rug. That really bothers him. If he would be happy with her, let him make 5,000 toys on the rug. He doesn't care. Once he's not satisfied with her, everything she does, he has a comment. Why did you do that? Why did you use that credit card? Why did you pay the mortgage 2 days before? What do you care about all this shtuyot? Who cares about this? It's not that. It's her. So she has to know what to do, how to handle the situation, because remember, all the excuses he makes is not bothering him. There's different things here involved. One other common problem is that the parents are arguing about the way they're going to raise their children. She say left, he say right. And they begin to argue in front of the children, and the children catch the trick. Now we know. Whenever we want money, we know which one to come to. The mother, usually it's easier. So mommy will give us money. When we want the Game Boy back, mommy is the address. When we want something else, they already know how to fool you. They're going to come to him behind your back. They're going to come. That's not going to be a good education for the children, especially. So you have to make up rules. This is my territory. This is yours. They're asking me about this. Go to mommy. That's her decision. Something else, it's my decision. And you split responsibility. And you always work by the rules. Not according to the mood. One day yes, one day no. Give them, don't give them. You want to argue, go to a different place, argue, not in front of the children. Another problem is, don't ever tell your wife, ever, you have to learn from my mom how to cook. I should take you a week to see how my mother cook. Or the wife of somebody else. Don't ever give in front of your wife a compliment to another woman. I'm not talking besides the fact that it's not modest to do such a thing, religious-wise. I'm talking, don't ever give a compliment to another woman in front of your wife. Your wife will never forget this comment for the rest of her life. 50 years later, she's going to remember that you went to a restaurant with this couple, and you told her, you see how she made a diet? She lost 30 pounds. She became 20 years younger. Your wife got the message. Don't give compliments. You see, why don't you learn from the wife of Yitzhak? She never argued with him in front of people. She respects her husband. Even if you're right, don't ever say these things. Let's talk a little bit about the women. A woman, if her husband is fine with her, if he's good with her, she really lives for her husband. If her husband will show her that he enjoys what she does, this is the greatest happiness for her. If he tells her, wow, you're such a great cook, I don't want to eat anywhere else, just your food. Or, you know what, I appreciate how much efforts you put on raising the children. It would drive me crazy to do this. Even if you don't mean it, you must lie about it constantly. Now you may say, the Torah says you're not allowed to lie. I have news for you. There is one time that to lie, actually twice, to lie it's a mitzvah. Where is a mitzvah to lie? When two Jews are about to have an argument or a fight, and one came to you and said, what did this guy told you about me? Tell me. You don't tell him he said that you're stingy and you're a crook. You don't tell him that. You tell him, you say that you're a nice person. He doesn't know why you're in a bad mood. Change the words. That's not what he said. It's mitzvah to change. The brother of Moshe Rabbeinu Aaron used to trick the people. He used to come to Reuven. Reuven, you know, you have a fight with this guy Shimon for already 6 months. Just yesterday Shimon was in my house crying that he misses you. You were his best friend. He doesn't know what you have against him. He loves you very much. He's embarrassed to come, ask for forgiveness for you. He really likes you. Why are you not in touch with him? Really? That's what he told you about me? I thought he want to kill me. No, believe me. He really want to kill him. But he made up the whole story. Then he went to the other guy. He told him the exact same story. And then now, from enemies, they became brothers. So what's the next step? We make a party. He invite both of them. As soon as they come into the house, oh, this is what he told me, so I can go and shake his hand. Because he just told my friend yesterday that he misses me very much. They come, they shake hands. A month later, they find out that nothing ever happened. But it's too late by then. They became friends again. This is what the Pirkei Avot say about Aaron. He loves peace. He runs after peace. And he runs after the people and bring them closer to the Torah. Today, it's impossible to have healthy marriage without having God in your family. It's impossible. And I'll explain why. Not that I came to convince you to be religious. I'm just describing a reality. And especially when I have 14 years of experience, I see it all the time. In the old generations, your parents, your grandparents, in Iran, in Ashkenaz, no matter where you came from, remember, even people that were not so religious, they had integrity, natural integrity. The world was a cleaner place to live. When a person say, I will give you the money on that date, it was on that date. A handshake was a handshake. People used to make deals in diamonds in millions of dollars without lawyers, without contract. Handshake, no witnesses. Shaking hands, deal was a deal. That's the world was. No women were not modest. I have a movie from 1933 in Hungary. The first non-religious Jewish ladies in Hungary dancing together Hora. In Hungary, that's talking more than 8 years ago. The first non-religious Zionist, anti-religion, you should see how they dressed. The Rebbitzin don't dress like them today. The wife of the chief rabbi of Israel, she's not modest like those anti-religion women from 1933. Two, three generations, look at the people the way they dress today. When a woman does not respect herself and her body, it's very difficult to get respect from the husband or the other way around. When a husband don't have respect, it's very difficult to receive respect from his wife. I will explain what I mean. When the Torah was given to the Jewish nation, up to this day, a man used to see a woman in the street. He likes her, she likes him, he comes to her. This is the Jewish nation, not talking Goyim. He say, would you marry me? She say, yes. How would they get married? Who knows? How people used to get married a day before we received the Torah in Mount Sinai? How? He used to take her into his house, alone. They have relation, and they become husband and wife. No ring, no rabbis, no nothing. That's the natural way of getting married that God created was like this. Once a woman have relation with a man, according to the Torah, officially she became his wife. Without a wedding, without a party, without a ketubah, without witnesses, without a rabbi, without any of that. Just the fact that she agreed that a man will have intimate relation with her, made her officially his wife. Just think for a second, how many ladies in this generation, before they got married to their real husband, how many husbands they had before him? You wonder why the marriage is not successful. Now you have to know one more rule in nature. The first man that was with a woman is always the most important man for her. For some reason, it's a psychology. It's something that God made in a creation. There is a tighter connection, spiritual connection between the first as opposed to all the others. Why? Because God didn't want her to have others. I'll give you another example. A young virgin girl that comes to marry a Jewish religious guy. If he has to evaluate her, her value is 200 zuz. Whatever it is, it's a different kind of coin from the old days. But her value is 200. Let's say $200,000 in an average value. If she's a widow or a divorced woman, automatically from the Torah, her value goes down to 100. This is God's orders. Because she's not a brand new product. She didn't make a scene. We're not talking about girls that went and did all whatever they did. We're talking she was officially married to a man. The poor guy died. Just the fact she's not a virgin anymore, half of her value went right away. This is the way God looks at us. Remember, we can think whatever we want. It's irrelevant. Because what we have to know is what the Creator thinks about us. Based on that, He's going to determine what we're going to have and not. That's why we do a lot of things. We have a lot of aggravations. If we only knew the reason, we could correct it in a minute. But we don't know. That's why we suffer 30, 40 years sometimes. So, one day the rabbi saw that the level of the people went down tremendously. They're not as holy as they were. And the rabbi decided to make a different kind of wedding. What is it? He has to either buy her or give her a contract. Called ketubah, or give her a ring or even money. Not necessarily a ring. A ring, it's only a custom. Technically, if a man wants to marry a woman today, in front of two witnesses, kosher witnesses, Shomer Shabbos, he gives her anything that's worth more than a coin, more than a quarter in our day. Would you marry me by receiving this book, this Siddur? She say yes. The two witnesses saw it. She hold it. She became officially his wife. If 5 minutes later she went with another man and became pregnant, the kids are bastards. But there was no rabbis over there. You don't need a rabbi. Rabbi is only the manager of the ceremony. With or without him, it's an official marriage. So, this is now two other ways to get married. One way is to buy the woman out by giving her some kind of a gift and she agreed to receive it. Or ketubah. That's it. Later, the rabbi saw that people got used to get married in those two ways that they made it up. And they say, you know what? From now on, it's forbidden to get married by having relation. No one is allowed to do it anymore. Now you may come and say, what's going on here? God gave us a book. Before the Torah, everybody that wanted to get married, this is the way he was doing it. After the Torah, God say, what's the right way to get married? You meet a woman, you ask her to become your wife, you go and have intimate relation with her, she became your wife. Came the rabbi and canceled it. You may ask, who gave the rabbis the authority to change or modify the Torah? The answer is God Himself. Who knows where in the Torah God gave permission to the head rabbis of every generation to do whatever they see that it's right to do for this, for the safety or for helping the generation? Where does it say it? It's in Parashat Shoftim. If you open Parashat Shoftim, you see that the Torah say, when you have a question or a doubt, and you come to the head rabbis in your generation, they are the messenger of God. Everything they order you based on this Torah, you must listen to them. Do not move left or right from the orders that they gave you. And this is a strong one. This is, by the way, one of the 613 rules. One of them is to listen to the rabbi. The same way you have a mitzvah to put tefillin, the same way you have a mitzvah to pray at least once a day, the same way you have a mitzvah to eat kosher, the same way you have a mitzvah to circumcise the baby in the 8th day, one of the mitzvot is to listen to the rabbis, what they tell you. Alright? A kosher rabbi is based on the Torah. The rabbi saw that the right and healthy situation for marriages is to make a ceremony like we do today, chuppah, and they went and modified this order of God and they made it the way we do it today. So the way we do it today. Now, the fact that the woman was created from Adam, she was supposed to understand that the success of her husband really depends on her. In the entire Torah, the written and the oral Torah, they never called the woman the wife of Mr. X, or Ishto, or Ishto. They always call him Bito, Beto, Beto. What's Beto? Means his house. His house. Every time you open up the oral Torah, when the Chachamim was speaking about somebody's wife, they didn't call her the wife of Rabbi Shimon. No, the house of Rabbi Shimon. What do you learn from this? The entire atmosphere in a house depends on a woman. Behind every successful man, there's a successful woman. One other thing that the men don't know, that their entire parnasa, the entire wealth of their house, depend on his wife only, nothing on him. Once he got married to this particular Miriam, from now on, her fortune control his wealth. If he makes her cry, every time she's upset and crying, right away he loses from his annual parnasa, from his annual living. So if this year he was supposed to make $1 million, every time she cried, a part of this $1 million went to the garbage, and it's guaranteed. That's what the Torah says. Worse than that, the Kabbalah teaching us that the woman and the wealth in heaven, there's like a trees. There's a tree, you have the actual tree, then you have the branches and you have the leaves. There is one branch that the souls of the women and the fortune of the living, the money, comes from the same branch in heaven, from the same branch. Therefore, when the wife is crying, it's affecting your living. When your woman forgot to get dressed and people enjoy from her body in the street, every time somebody look at your wife, not touching her, touching, it's the end of the world. Even looking is taking away from your parnasa. You may come and say, wait a minute, it doesn't make sense. I made this year $100 million and my wife never dress. She never get dressed. Look at her on the street, everywhere she go. I beg her, put a coat, something. No. So you should have made $1 billion this year. Okay, I'm okay with $100 million, Rabbi. Believe me, I'm not going to cry over the rest. That's besides all the other problems. This is just by the way, it's reality. People don't know these things. Why? They never learn these things. Let's move on. Even when a person gets together with his wife, there are rules how to do it. It's not just like animals. There are rules how to do it. It's not the time now to go into details, but you have to understand that everything in life, everything that God made in life, He gave us rules how to behave. If we do it in the wrong way, we later on pay a very heavy price. Now you may come and say, "What is it my fault? I did not grow up in yeshiva. I didn't know all these things. I hardly listen to Torah once or twice a week." That's not an excuse, because not knowing reality will not save you. If a person drink, I don't know, Diet Coke, and it has something that makes cancer in it. That's what they say, I don't know. So if he has 10 years later cancer, and the doctor told him, you know why? Because you drink a lot of Diet Coke. So he's going to say, it's not fair, I didn't know that Diet Coke have poison. I didn't know. You didn't know, it doesn't change reality. So you have to understand, many bad things that came to us because we don't know reality doesn't mean that it's we're going to get saved because we don't know reality. It's still going to affect us. Now, modesty, it's a very important thing for the success in the house. If the woman is very modest, she's going to be blessed with righteous kids that love God. When when a woman is modest, whenever she becomes pregnant, God has to make a decision which person to send her. Now remember, you always look at kids, you're thinking, oh, what a cute kid. Why are you beating him up? It's a little kid. It's not a little kid. There's no really kids in life. Looking at kids, it's only an illusion. This kid is an adult. 10 years ago, before he was reincarnated in this body, this soul, he was Sam Yitzchak, a businessman from Manhattan. A big shot. Torturing hundreds of employees in his business. Now God took him and said, I'm giving you another chance. I will reincarnate you again. To these parents. It's not a coincidence. He decided from all the people in the world which shidduch to make. This wicked person, the adult that just died, I'm giving him another chance. Where do I want him to grow up? I want him to grow up by this family. And there's a reason for that, many reasons. This family will not be good for his correction. Only that particular family. So he's growing up in this family. Everybody thinks it's a new product, this kid. He was just born, first time in life. No, he was here. How do you know that I'm right? I once told you that. You take 3 different kids. You give them a bag of bamba, each one of them, or pretzels. You come to the first kid, you ask him for one. He looks at you like the devil. He give you one. If you want the second one, he's falling on the floor, he's crying, he doesn't want to give you a second one. You come to the next one, he gives you the whole bag. He took one, he see you want, he take the whole bag. It doesn't bother him. You come to the third one, even one he doesn't want to give you. You gave him the whole bag. Even one he doesn't want to give you. Or you go with the kids to the supermarket. You have 3 kids. Twins, 2 years old, and another one, let's say 4 years old. One of them, every time you go to the supermarket, will make such a show. Everything he see, he wants. Screams, he wants chocolate, he wants this, he wants that. Everywhere you go, I want this. If you don't give him, what happened? What happened? Everybody... It's the worst day of their life that they came to shop in this store. Why? Your kid is screaming over there. So what happened in the end? You surrender to them, which is a big mistake. You want to avoid the embarrassment to yourself, and you're destroying the future of your son. We'll get into it in a minute. But the other two don't care. They ask. You say, no, we cannot have it today. It's quiet. What do you see? Where do the kids know about all these things? Why do each one of them behave different? Because these kids are really adults. The first one that gave you one was a little bit generous in his previous life. He gave a little charity, but not too much. The second one gave you the whole bag. Every poor person who knock on his door, take whatever you want. What do you need? You need to marry your daughter, $10,000? Enjoy. Mazal tov. Give him a hug. I know people like this. Not that many, but we know. The third one, you came in a bad time. I don't feel good today. You see me, but I'm not really home. By mistake, I open up the door. Rabbi Aderet once told me a story. He told me that somebody, one poor person, knock on the door of a wealthy person. So he called him from the window. The poor person, I'm not here today. He didn't have his kids in the house. So he called him from the window, today I'm not here. You know? So, how are we handling the situation with the kids? First of all, it's a big mistake to give them everything they want. If any, you want to give them very little from what they want. You want to let your kids appreciate things. You want them to walk. You want them to participate in the house. You want them to mow the ground, the grass. You want them to help making order in a garage. You want them to wash the car if it's necessary. Now it's Pesach. You want them to do the chametz. You want them to work, not just to give them all the time. You give them all the time, you destroy them for the rest of their life. If they'll be lucky and they have easy living, then you did not make such a damage. Reality shows that life is not, it's very difficult. These kids cannot handle any crisis, no situation, nothing in their life. Whenever they have one problem, Dad, I need $100,000. You gotta come save me. Why? You made it. Let them be independent. Let them work. Holidays, vacations, let them work. Let them go make a few dollars an hour. Don't be embarrassed. Don't worry. But why? I have a lot of money. Why should they go work? It's not for the money. You want to make them independent. You don't want to do it. Later on, you will see the results. Some kids, they only go to college to live 5 more years on the expense of their parents. They have no intention to become what they went to learn. They already know in the day that they enter college, I speak to some of them. So why did you go to college? You really want to be an architect? I say, I cannot stand it. So why are you going? It's 5 more years. Pizza, party, my parents pay the bill, I have a car, their dorm. Why do I care? If my father insists that I'll go, I'll go. Who are you fooling? You're fooling yourself. You're spending so much money. This kid has no plans for that. Plus, another mistake is that from the time the kids are very young, you already decided for them what they're going to be. You're going to be a doctor. You heard me? I don't want anything else. Well, how do you know? You cannot decide for him his fortune. Every person has a correction in life. God did not make all the people in the world with a test to become a doctor. A doctor is a specific test. It's a very difficult test, by the way, to be a doctor. Why? Because most of the doctors fail in their test. Because when they save the life of a person, they take credit for it. And that's a big sin. Because life and death is not in the hands of the doctors, only in the hands of Hashem. And after they get used to take care of patients day after day, night after night, and they see people dying every day, they'll lose their feelings for it. They got used to it. When a person screams in a hospital, they walk by, sometimes they don't feel the pain. So it's very difficult test to be a doctor. Plus, they call you at 2 o'clock at night, you don't feel like going, you're cheating, to go, not to go. They call you in the middle of your wedding or something, you're in a wedding, you get a call, a beep, I'm sorry, I have to run. It's a big test to become a doctor. I remember once when my wife gave birth, I think for the second son, I had an argument with a doctor in Manhattan. I told him, listen, this is your decision. We're not going by your decision. We're going by God's decision. And according to our rules, we're not allowed to do what you want. I don't even remember what was the argument was about. Talking more than 10 years ago. So then, the doctor in front of me tells my your husband is really crazy. I'm telling you, I will be careful. I said, all right, what happened next? You know who was this doctor? Let's see if you can guess. Who was this doctor? Did you ever hear the story about a doctor that made his initial on the stomach of one woman? That was the one. I told her, he said, I'm crazy. I'm telling you, he's mental, this guy. 2 years later, we heard, he's all over the news. He made his initial on the stomach of one of his patients. I tell her, you see what happened? They think sometimes they are God. No, you're not. You're only a servant of God to help curing people, if God wants. Everything depends on a woman. I'm going to read to you from a very important Kabbalah book. Sometimes a person is wicked, but he has a modest and humble woman. He is going to have great children. Righteous, honest. Sometimes a person is righteous, but he has a bad woman, and his deeds are turning bad. Therefore, a woman has to put all her efforts to direct her children in the right way. Not to have too much mercy on them when they get patched once in a while or when they get a punishment. No, leave him alone. No, don't do anything. It's not a good thing. A kid has to have strict education, not just give them whatever they want. Okay, this time we forgive you. No. Punishment is punishment and reward is reward. You have to educate the kids from when they're very young that life is not a picnic. Whatever you do good, you're going to get rewarded. Whatever you do bad, you're going to get punished for it. And there's no forgiveness and no mercy. Too much mercy on the kids will be used against them in the end. You're using your heart and your feelings. You're ignoring your brain. Later on, you're going to pay the price. So she should not have extra mercy. She has to learn from Bathsheba, the wife of King David, the mother of King Solomon, when she used to beat up her son, King Solomon, almost every day. It wasn't just a wicked kid, King Solomon, you know. Age 12, he was the king of Israel already. Age 12, the story with the babies, when he wanted to cut the baby to two, he was 12 years old. The dream that he had when God came to him in his dream, and told him, what are you asking from me? You just became the king. So he didn't ask for money. He didn't ask for revenge against all his enemies. Nothing personal. He told God, I'm young. Make me a fair judge. To judge your nation fairly. So God told him, since you ask something for the sake of the nation of Israel and nothing personal, I will give you this and this and this. He made him the smartest person ever lived. The rest is history. And then right away he gave him an opportunity to become famous with the story of the baby. Two women were fighting for the baby. And that's how he became very famous. He was one of the most successful kings in the history of Israel until close to the end of his life. The women that he took, by not listening to God's order, turned his heart away from God. That's the last word about him. In the story of King Solomon, what's the last word about him in the Bible? The women that he took, by not listening to God, even though he had good intention, remember, he wanted to convert all these women, send them to their fathers, and make the entire world Jewish. He wanted to avoid antisemitism. He had a lot of great reasons to do it. But the Torah says the king should never have more than 18 wives. 18. 18. Overall 18. 18 wives. Now you have to know one thing. Sometimes people say, see, what are you telling us the Torah is against having ladies and women? King Solomon had 1,000 women. What are you telling me stories? So once I ask a person, tell me, the Torah said that King Solomon was a righteous person, big chacham, tzaddik, a judge, so many great things about him, all his life. I told him, listen, I want to ask you a question. Take the filthiest person on earth today. He's addicted to women. Oh, that's all in his mind. Corrupted mind, dirty, filthy, only thinking about dirty stuff. Can he marry 1,000 ladies? So he marry 5 women, he's going to be dead in a month. 1,000 wives he can have at the same time. So, no. Even not 100, even not 20. So what are you saying to me? That King Solomon is filthiest than the worst person on earth? That's what you're saying? It makes sense? So no, it doesn't make sense. So how you understand the story in the Torah? Open the Gemara and understand the story. Why are you making up assumptions? What was his whole plan? He needed 1,000 wives, come on. He had time for 1,000 wives. Where does he have time for them? The whole plan was to convert the entire world. He brought her 2-3 months, send her back to her father. 2-3 months, taught her Judaism. And she went back to her nation. She was a princess. It was all princesses. The wives, the daughters of all the important kings in the world, one after one, from the tribes, from everywhere. He was such a famous person, everybody wanted to marry him. He made her a Jew, teach her Torah, send her back to her nation. In the time of King Solomon, nobody was against Israel. The Holy Temple was great life for the Jews in Jerusalem. His plan was successful. But God told him, since you mixed your own opinion against my order, even though you had good intention, look what happened. What happened? He got affected for all the garbage of this goyot. She came from this background, she came from that background. He wasn't as righteous in the end of his life. That's what the Torah says. So what are we seeing here? If you stick to the rules, 100%, don't mix your own decision. This is what God told you to do. I don't know better than you. This is what you want, I'll do it. No problem. I don't understand, I don't have to understand. This is what you order me, fine, I'm willing to do it. So a woman has to learn from Bathsheba. She used to beat King Solomon. One time when he woke up 3 hours late. You know what it means, 3 hours late. Instead of 5 in the morning, at 8 he woke up. He used to wake up in the sunrise. So, because he was sleeping a little bit late, what his mother did not bring him hot chocolate to bed. What did she do? She took the whip and hit him. I don't know where, he doesn't say where, but she beat him up. And she was a righteous woman, and he was a righteous person. When a woman wants to pray for her children, she makes sure she puts charity first in a box or something, and right away she starts to pray. You have to know one thing. Even if the future of this kid is terrible, is going into a terrible direction, if a woman cries more than the husband, if she cries for that kid with tears, especially when she lights candles or when she reads Tehillim, she can change the entire future of this kid just thanks to her prayers. And if it's with tears, it's even better. Because the Torah says, Sha'are dima lo ninalu. The gates of tears are still open. Many gates in heaven are closed to the nation of Israel. Cannot enter. the gates, or once a person begins to cry, Hashem is accepting his prayer express. And if it's the mother, even more. So, well, let's conclude what we say so far. Modesty, being tough, respect the husband, and the most important thing in marriage, that you have to know that husbands have a lot of pressure in work. In work, whatever they do, they come home, they're sometimes in a bad mood. One of the obligations of the woman is not to begin with her complaints right away. What a day I had, he cried all day, I took him to the doctor, my head is pounding, the cleaning lady didn't show up, I can't take this anymore. He had enough. The first hour, relax, don't open up your heart yet. Prepare the food, see, talk, how was your day, you see he's depressed, what happened, tell me. Get into the heart of, then when you find the right opportunity, come with the list of your requests. I had this, I had that, I need that, I need that. Also, sometimes the ladies have a list of requests regardless of the situation of the husband. Whether he has a good ear, whether he has a horrible ear, he's losing only money, she still have a demand. And if he cannot supply, I want a divorce. That's not the way I grew up. I cannot handle it. Why? God put you in a test. Why you refuse to accept your test? If you would be someone who does not deserve to be in this situation, God would not do it to your husband. If your husband lost all his money and he became poor, even though he was very rich, that means you also deserved it. You are part of the problem. The parnasa of the husband comes from the wife, mainly. So therefore, you got to be with him with the good and the bad. Many, many wives, they ended up leaving their husband after the situation was not so good. I'll give you an example. The Torah says, if a person marry a woman for her father's wealth, they're not going to have success in this marriage, especially they're going to have problems with the children. But if they offered him the money, it's not that he asked. He didn't know. He went out with her. They decided to get married. Later on, the husband came and said, listen, I have some money, I want to give it to you. I want to open your business. I want to buy you a house. That's no problem. But if he went after her for that, he's not going to see success in this marriage. Plus, it's very important to know who you marry. Why? God forbid, if one day you die, who's going to raise your children? The father of your wife. She cannot handle all the kids. She's going to need help. Who is she going to go to? Her father. Who is the father? A gangster for the market. All day standing in the street, executing people. This is going to... But she's a good wife. But look at her father. God forbid, one day your children are going to be in his hand. One day you'll be in jail. There's so many Jews go to jail, you have no idea what's going on here. Just now I heard 3 18-year-old kids from yeshiva. Yeshiva, kids, babies, 18 years old. Somebody told them, you want to make some money? We have antique, barrels, something antique, to go take it to Japan. And we're going to pay for your trip. All you have to do is just take it with you. They took it with them. It was full of drugs somehow. They put drugs inside. I don't know how. They called them now in Japan a week before Pesach. Who knows what's going to be with them now? You have no idea what's going on here. Every little mistake that people do, the next day FBI, this guy tell about this guy, they catch one crook, he turns in 100 people in. Problems. So many Jews are in jail, you have no idea what's going on here. That's why it's reality. It's reality. You don't know what's going to be next. It's important. A woman that does not behave in a modest way, she loses her rights according to the Torah. Which means, if a woman speaks to a man in hidden rooms, he did not touch her. Just the fact that she goes into a room and they close the door for a few minutes, this woman, if her husband warns her and she continues to do it, she loses her rights immediately. If they get divorced and she has in the ketuvah $1 million, she gets nothing. Why? Because Hashem is not lenient when it comes to modesty. It's very strict. We see unbelievable things. You know, in the old days, when they wanted to describe a prostitute in the Gemara, how they describe her, do you know? Who knows how the Torah describes a prasti? The Torah never dreamed, the rabbis never dreamed what they're going to have in this generation. So in their time, a prostitute was a woman that her skirt was, she was lifting her skirt up to her knee. That's a prostitute. Or she put bells in her ankles that when she walks, it makes noise, attracts the attention of the men on the street. But she wasn't dressed like today. She was covered like the Arabs. But she only have bells that people see that she's passing by. They see her. The Jews never cover their face. You should know. It's against the Torah. It's a mitzvah to be modest. It's very important for the atmosphere of the family and for the future of the family. But we're not allowed to cover our face. Why are we not allowed to cover our face? What's the word face mean in Hebrew? Panim. What panim means? Pnim, inside. Face in Hebrew means inside. That's what it means. So by looking at the face of a person, you read his entire inside. His psychology, his mentality. You have to know, today, Baruch Hashem, after many years of experience and learning, sometimes I look at a guy less than a minute. I can write you a whole list about him. He walked 5 steps. He make few moves. He ate few things. He spoke to two, three people. You see right away who's the guy from A to Z. Honest, not honest. Lazy, not lazy. Arrogant, not angry, not liar. You see right away. By the way people walk, you see if they humble or pride. How a humble person walk and how a proud person walk. A proud person, how does he walk? Like this. A humble person, how he walk? Like this. They don't know that they walk like this. Don't get me wrong. It's not that they plan it like this. I'm not talking about the crooks that they come like this, you know. I'm talking those who are naturally walk like this. It's in the subconscious of a person. Your personality makes you behave in a certain way. I'll give you an example. Let's say you sit with your friend in a lobby in the hotel. You're both speaking about something and somebody that you don't like is coming. He wants to join the conversation. Automatically, you were sitting with your friends face to face and you see that somebody is coming from your right. What happened automatically? Without realizing, you're going like this. Later in a video, you see that you saw your lover is coming. You turn around a little bit to the back and you're not realizing it. Because what goes through your mind, making the body react automatically. I give you another example. When a person is sitting in a lecture, I can tell you each one of you who enjoyed the lecture and who is dying that it's going to be over. How do I know? How do I know? The one who sits like this, relaxed, enjoying, or sitting like this, they enjoy every minute. And one who sits like this, what does it mean? He doesn't know that he's showing me. He doesn't really know. He sits like this, that means, no, I'm already halfway out. Or a person that moves a lot. He moves a lot. He moves like this all the time. That means he's nervous, he's dying to go. So the people don't realize. In business, it's very important. Because if you have a customer, you know right away what he thinks about you and your product. Not only that, the colors that people see in the background affecting their decision without them knowing. Today they already learned, this is all Torah, you should know that. Whatever they find out today, Chazal spoke about it 2,000 years ago. They found out that the color of the walls in your office is going to decide if this person is relaxed in your office or not. Colors. I'll give you another example. Once they put, in one of the shows, they put a guy and he say, I want every one of you at home to choose a number. And I'm going to tell you which number you chose. How can it be? Millions of people watching him, each one will choose a different number. How is he going to tell them what they chose? Impossible, no? Believe it or not, I looked at that, and I chose number 23. And then he says, is it true that each one of you chose 23? And I said, wow, what's going on here? So then he said, wow, you think I'm reading your minds? Then I thought to myself, he can read my mind, but how can he read millions of people's mind? It cannot be that we all chose the same number. It's impossible. Believe it or not, everybody chose 23. You know why? No. Because he was standing in a place with lots of people walking around him, like in Penn Station or a place like this, and the camera is on him. And while he was talking, everybody went left, right, people walking, rumbling, jumping, running. Once he said, choose a number, and I tell you which number you're going to choose, one of the people who went diagonal behind his back was wearing a Michael Jordan shirt, number 23. But it was so fast, running. You didn't really see it. You didn't realize it. But your subconscious at that moment recorded that. That particular moment that he spoke, the number 23 popped up. Millions of people chose 23. What do you see? There are ways to control the mind of the person without him realizing it. Also in commercials. Why people like commercials so much and that's really affecting them? What, are you a fool? Don't you know the product already? What's the commercial going to help if I'm going to buy it or not? I already know this. Everybody knows Coca-Cola. You need to see it on a commercial. What's the tricks here? What they put inside the commercial, there are many hidden things that affecting your decision, what to do, and you don't realize it. I'll give you an example. One time, they put a commercial on television for dogs and cats food. Every time they played that commercial, all the cats and the foods in America would stand in front of the screen. They're dying to have this food. So what's an American average dog owner doing when he sees his dog is very happy to see it? The next day he goes to the store and buys that box, right? Only after years, after this company made billions, they found out that they tricked the public. How did they trick them? How can you trick the public? How can you affect all the dogs in America to run and stand like this and once and bark for the food? Inside the commercial, they put a whistle that a ear of a man cannot hear. It's such a sharp whistle and it's working such a fast frequency, only the animals can hear it. Do you know that they have this, you pay $20, you buy these special machines that when you plug it in, no bugs, no mosquitoes come to your house? It sends away all the mosquitoes? How? You don't hear anything. But they have a demo button, this red button. When you press on it, you hear such a strong whistle, you feel like you cannot hear anything. It's so loud. This is what the mosquitoes hear when you release the button. Now you're hearing it. When you release it, that's what they hear all the time. They don't want to come close to your house. Who wants to hear such a terrible